And we're back! And this time it makes sense, Jake.
It does.
And this time it makes sense.
And the best part, though, yes, is like I'm actually high enough for it to not make sense and still make sense as well.
Alright. Welcome back to the Incredibly Strange Creatures Who Stopped Living and Became Mixed Up Podcasters! I'm Matt. That's David on the phone. We're going to work on getting the audio better.
I'm Jake.
That's Jake O to my left, and this week we're here to talk about another creepy movie. Sorry, I had a Ben Kissel moment there.
I mean, I'm not gonna lie, it was kind of like creepy.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
That's not underselling it either.
I just finished Side Stories from last podcast, so I've kind of got a Ben inspiration in that intro, I think. But anyway, David, this week's movie is one that you chose called Don't Go in the House.
Yes. So, did some research on this one, and guess what, guys?
What?
Literally no fucking production notes online.
No, perfect.
Like, this movie is just so obscure. It just came out, and we'll talk about this, came out at just the worst possible time for it, that, like, I can't even find box office numbers on this. This is how obscure this fucking movie is, guys.
Jesus Christ.
So we have no idea what it netted or anything.
We have no idea what it made. It didn't make any money, though. I know it didn't make much money. We'll say that. I mean, nothing substantial. Its lack of notoriety in large part stems from the fact that it was initially released in theaters just 6 months before the original Friday the 13th. And that's important because, this has been lumped in with slasher films. I maybe wouldn't even characterize it as a slasher film, but it does have some of the hallmarks of it with, the violence and the sexism, stuff like that. And that's important, though, because after Friday the 13th came out, the entire genre blew up.
Right.
And so movies like this, like you had Maniac that came out a couple months after Friday the 13th, that made a ton of money with a very similar plot line. The only difference is that it came out during the quote-unquote golden age of slasher films, whereas this missed it by about half a year.
That's really interesting. It's also, I guess, it's hard to classify it as a slasher since there's not really any slashing. But I know that's not a literal term for the genre.
But, I mean, to be fair, it kind of actually is, though. All slashers are slashers.
They generally are killing with some sort of blade and other weapons.
Well, see,
at least
strange.
At some point.
It's strange because it has some of the hallmarks of his early slasher movie, the sexism, the whole male, the violent kills, that kind of thing. But you don't really see all the kills, as we'll get into.
No.
And that's why I think kind of separates it from being a full-on slasher. Back to the main point. Essentially, this movie came out too early to catch on to the moral hysteria driven panic that was caused by the slasher movie explosion of the early 80s. So whereas Friday the 13th made a lot of its money based on, Siskel and Ebert flipping their shit about it on television, this movie got none of that. It didn't get any attention. And that really played a big part in why it failed. And as far as who directed it, name's Joseph Ellison, he would only want to direct one other film named Joey, which was released in 1986, but we'll talk a little bit more about him later.
Interesting. Okay. Well, let's start with the cast. I'm glad I get this one because this I was excited about. Our main character, Donnie. Let's see. Hold on. I'm sorry. I'm scrolling. Oh, you didn't include the last. I don't remember his last name in it. So Donnie's the main character. He's played by Dan Grimaldi. He enjoyed a relatively long film career, and this was his first movie, if I'm not mistaken. And that includes a supporting role in Rob Reiner's 1994 film North. He also had a solid television career, playing guest roles in Law & Order, NYPD Blue, and most notably, and for me, I was really excited when I realized who he was, Patsy Parisi from 47 episodes of The Sopranos. He has not acted in anything since 2016, though.
Oh, that's kind of crazy. Other notables is Robert Carnegie, who played Bobby Tuttle. His other film credits include an extra role in William Friedkin's controversial 1980 crime drama Cruising, starring Al Pacino.
Oh.
He also played the role of Tex in the 1980 comedy horror film Mother's Day.
That's a movie we're definitely going to do at some point. I'm sorry to cut you off, but we will be doing Mother's Day.
Oh, fair enough. I'm all about it.
You're still
it.
Reading it off your phone when it's on the phone.
Yeah, but this is like... I need my glasses for that.
That's fine. We're having fun.
Oh, yeah, most definitely. But Mother's Day, directed by Charles Kaufman. Additionally, he had a few guest roles in 1980s television shows, most notably an episode of Knight Rider with David Hasselhoff.
No, the Hoff.
Oh, you don't hassle the Hoff.
The Hoff. Ooh, and the Hoff. And his car, Kit, played by Mr. Feeny from Boy Meets World.
I know, right? That's,
yes,
that's crazy.
That's random tidbit for you.
Up top.
Yeah. So, you know, the only other really notable, as you can imagine, you know, with a lot of these kind of movies from back in the day, not all these actors weren't doing much of anything. The only other really notable actress in this film is Darcy Sheen, who played the aptly named Girl in the Car in Don't Go in the House, and she's probably had the longest and most successful career of anyone from this film. She's actually support guests and supporting roles in a ton of popular television shows. Like Miami Vice, you know, the original, not the remake that came out a couple years ago that no one gave a shit about, you know, but you know, I know. The West Wing, My Name is Earl, Mad Men, Desperate Housewives, and here's a big one, guys. She also played the nanny in 2018's Marvel Studios mega hit Ant-Man and the Wasp, which officially makes a member of the cast of Don't Go in the House a member of the Marvel Cinematic Universe.
What a tie-in. That's rather fucking awesome.
I also want to say that her and the other girl in the car. I'm assuming we're talking about the two that go to the house together with him, right?
Yeah.
They were two of the most obnoxious characters in cinema history, and I was completely completely fine with when they were being pulled in. I don't want to give up too much. We're about to go. I could not stand those two.
The acting is not good in this movie outside of, you know, the main actor. Just be, you know.
And even him, you can tell this is a rookie actor, but he's...
Yeah, he was green.
Yes.
He was green.
Yes.
Yeah.
All right, so the story, let's get into it. Let's jump right in. There it is, Kohler. Donnie Kohler, Donald Kohler, is obsessed with fire. A flashback shows the origin of his obsession. When he was young, he used to suffer severe abuse from his mother, who would hold his bare arms over a gas stove to burn the evil out of him. After his mother dies, he sets out to avenge himself on anyone who bears a resemblance to her. And I didn't even realize this the first watch through. There's a scene after he realized she has died.
Yes.
And first he, like, plays his rock music real loud. And then he's, like, jumping on furniture. But then he fucking sees a box of matches, and they don't actually show it, but you see, like, a shadow of him burning his mother's arms with the fucking matches.
He was reliving it. It's a weird exchange of power. You know, he wants that power that she had over him for all his years.
And that's one of the better... I think that's one of the better scenes in the movie, in my opinion.
Yeah, I agree. It kind of goes deeper into his psychosis, you know.
Yeah.
And I remember you and I were talking earlier. This relationship here kind of reminded me, you said, of Ed Gein and his mother. Of course, the theatrical, you know, equivalent of that would be Norman Bates and his mother.
Yeah.
you know, kind of an obsession / hatred with the woman who abused him.
I think a little angrier than Psycho, but
I agree.
Definitely parallels to be drawn.
Yeah, absolutely. So he befriends a florist named Cappy. She walks him back to his mother's house, where he knocks her unconscious and chains her up. Ignoring Cappy's pleas for mercy, he pours gasoline on her and burns her with his flamethrower. Now, this scene right here is probably what this film is most known for.
Yeah,
and
this...
It's well done.
This scene is one of the reasons why it was named on the UK, film nasties.
And then we'll go into that a bit more later too. But this is the scene right here that made this movie really anything.
I also want to point out, seemed like some very early shaved vag action going on with this young lady that you didn't see in the late 70s, early 80s.
This is true.
That's very true. Yeah, that's very true.
I'm sorry, I just noticed there wasn't a bush. I don't mean to be fucking...
Hey, man. That was, yes, people were very hairy in the 70s.
Okay, I'm glad we got through.
Maybe she was just innovative.
All right, David, I'm sorry.
No worries. Also, over the next few days, Donnie murders two other women by immolating them, similar to Kathy, except these aren't shown. Donnie also burns his mother's corpse, as you talked about, and dresses up in her bedroom, along with the other three dead women.
Which, honestly, it gets me. But after doing this, he begins to feel remorse for his actions, and he goes to church, where he tells Father Garrity about the abuse his mother inflicted upon him and about his urges to kill. Father Garrity persuades Donnie to try and move on with his life and leave the past in the past. Which, I mean, that's kind of, like, shitty for a Catholic priest, but, I mean, it's kind of like, that's Catholics for you.
Yeah.
They don't really give a fuck.
In an attempt to stop the killing... Donnie accepts his friend Bobby's invitation to go out on a double date. And this is where I'm gonna add a little bit here. There's a scene after this where he's in a clothing store purchasing clothing. And I didn't fucking understand the point of the scene the first time I watched it. It just seemed like this is padding. It's just padding. And then I watched it again with Jake, and I started to pick up undertones of real flirtatious vibe between the main character and the guy running the fucking store.
Who
and
you could tell...
was obviously gay.
Was obviously...
So I think that was hinting at some other, repressed, closeted homosexuality that his mother was probably also tormenting him about.
Either that, or maybe his hatred for his mother is what turned him to homosexuality.
Right. So there are undertones of that you really can't ignore.
Yeah.
It's a scene you wouldn't see in modern cinema, though.
This is true.
No way. Donnie shows up, but he's a bit shy and awkward. When the woman tries to take Donnie to the dance floor, she inadvertently holds his arms over the table's lighted candle, which reminds him of his childhood abuse. Donnie then angrily picks up the candle and smashes it on her head. Setting her hair on fire and scalding her face.
Oh, brutal, by the way. This is just fucking
brutal. And then he just, like, at first he just sort of nonchalantly walks out of the disco. And then...
Right.
And then...
He starts fleeing from the disco and he runs into two drunken girls. Now, before he gets to these two drunken girls, the girl whom he smashed the candle on her face and head with... her brother just happened to be at the disco, and how nobody heard this bitch screaming.
Yeah, because the scene is like, he's just still partying with people, and they come over and go, hey, your sister just got burned, and it's like, she's screaming, and her hair is on fire. But it was the late 70s, early 80s.
And everybody was coked out of their fucking mind.
Everyone was coked out of their mind. Everyone was, you know...
Speaking of doing drugs openly, sidebar real quick. Today I was dropping off a friend at a second work site, and I just happened to see a homeless man hitting a pizzo out in the open, just blasting away.
Just roasting it?
Just blasting away. And I had another person in the vehicle, and we both saw it, and we both like... he's really just blasting off like that?
Okay, so I'm gonna tell a David story. David used to work downtown City Hall, and I get a text from David one day. He goes, "I just while parking my car had a homeless man in full squat, just fire diarrhea out onto the sidewalk while maintaining eye contact with David."
And it gets worse, dude. His butt was actually facing Broadway, which is a major street in downtown San Diego, and then he stood there for about 5 minutes wiping. And so I'm just sitting here, this young, fresh intern out of college in the morning in downtown San Diego, about to go to work. Yeah. And I, he just walks away as if it's nothing, dude. There's just a big pile of poo and toilet paper.
Dude, all right.
Just sitting there. But anyway, we were way off base.
Sorry about that.
Sorry, I couldn't help myself. This is the type of debauchery you're going to get. It's a horror movie podcast. I think we're okay.
Sidebars happen.
Sidebars will happen. Anyways.
Fuck. After fleeing the disco, Donnie runs into two drunk girls on the street and takes them to his house.
These are the extremely obnoxious girls aforementioned.
Aforementioned, yes. Bobby, who is trying to find Donnie, and he winds up meeting up with Father Garrity on his way to Donnie's house, and he tells him what's going on, and so when they get to Donnie's house and nobody answers, like, they break in, and then they hear the girls or whatnot, and so they start rescuing the girls, and then Donnie sets Father Garrity on fire with his fucking flamethrower. Like, Jesus H. Christ, man. Like, luckily Bobby was, like, Johnny on the spot with it, you know? But it's still, like, the fucking flamethrower on
sets a Catholic priest on fire.
Like, don't get me wrong, quite hilarious. Like,
by the way, wearing a full-on asbestos fucking, like, flame-retardant suit, which would have killed him in the long run, no matter what happened.
Yes.
I just want to point that out. Yes. Mesothelioma, if you or anyone you know has been affected by mesothelioma... I'm not kidding. I'm sorry, I couldn't help myself.
So Donnie takes refuge inside his mother's bedroom. And we forgot to mention earlier that throughout this film, after his mother dies, he's hearing her voices the whole fucking movie.
And he's seeing her pop up in different areas and spots, and then she disappears. So you don't really know if this is just...
Oh, and her corpse just pops, like, her...
Yeah, that's what I was saying.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
And well, because, like, her, like almost, like, flashback visions of her, like, ghostly also...
We also didn't mention the voices in his head.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Which... Yeah, it's very much Norman Bates thing again. You know, it's very similar to Maniac, but came out basically a year later.
The only thing about the voices is they are very hard to understand. I don't know if you caught most of what they said throughout the movie. I did not.
I'm mostly deaf, dude.
So the voices expressed, the voices you can barely understand, when they expressed the disappointment in him, and the burned corpses come to life and attack him. Oh, shit. He frantically fights them off, but dies. They drag him to the floor as the house burns down around him.
And so, with that scene, here, in my interpretation, I don't think they really came to life. I think he just fucking, like, completely snapped at that point.
Yeah.
And just burned down the house around him.
Oh, yeah, no, I'm right there with you. I think what wound up happening was it was all in his head, and he just fucking kept torching everything.
Until he eventually was stuck in the burning house. The final scene then portrays a young boy named Michael watching a news report about Donnie's death. His mother scolds him for not turning off the TV and beats him viciously. I mean, she's just slapping the shit out of him. Okay, maybe viciously is a little bit.
Like, having had my ass whooped like that before,
because for me, like, the discipline, yeah, I got hit, but it was like one shot to the back of the head, and we're moving on.
That's just a love tap in my house. Like, when I got in trouble, depending on what happened, my dad had a paddle that had Osterman Attitude Adjustment Tool carved into it. And I had that bruised backwards onto my ass several times.
All right, well. So
you're saying you might start burning women in your basement?
Oh, negative. Negative, because I already have my own, like... My brain's already fucked enough to already know. I have friends with pigs. I'm good. I don't mind pulling teeth and nails.
Well, you could have friends with tigers, too, and apparently you'd be all right.
Yeah, but I have to have fish oil for that.
Yeah, you do need the fish oil and a meat grinder.
Yeah, I'm not... That's too complicated. Just pull the nails and teeth and throw them into the pen, and we're good.
So after she slaps him up a bit, she leaves the room, and Michael hears Donnie's voices in his head. And they tell him that they have come to help him. And then we get a painful fucking 1980s style, way too long of a pan in and zoom in of this kid's face. Literally, I'm like, cut it!
Oh, bro.
Cut it!
It was
cut it!
It was like 20 seconds too long.
But, you know, that was the style at the time. I get it.
Yeah, yeah. So many horror movies had that same ending. Like, hell, Sleepaway Camp had it.
Yeah. They didn't hold on it for fucking what felt like an eternity. But yes, you are correct.
Yeah. All right. So, initially released in November 1979, Don't Go in the House attracted controversy almost immediately because of its graphic depiction of the death of Kohler's first victim and the central theme of sadistic childhood abuse. Don't Go in the House came out at a time when the horror genre was being attacked by feminism, by feminists on grounds of it being misogynistic. And Ellison's film, along with William Lustig's Maniac, which came out, you know, basically 7-8 months later, I believe, was seen as two prime examples as to why the genre was dangerous. I would say Maniac actually kind of almost ripped this one off. It's kind of weird. They had very similar plot lines and very identical endings. What do you guys think?
I've actually not seen Maniac, so I'm interested, actually, to go back. You definitely know this era much better than I do, so I look forward actually to this podcast to fucking see these movies.
Oh yeah, same. Oh, same. Like, don't get me wrong, like, slashers are my shit, but like, you most definitely have way out seen more of these than I have.
David's just seen more movies than I have in general, but alright,
too much time on my hands.
Let's see. I'm sorry. I gotta scroll down. Censors demanded that the film was ultimately cut by almost 3 minutes. I'd love to see the director's cut then. What are those 3 minutes? That was when it was released in Britain in 1980. So we've seen those minutes. I would guess it was probably the naked girl getting burned to death.
Yeah, that's a pretty good guess.
Yeah. Yeah. But an uncut version was released on video by the Arcade label in 1982. Knowingly or not, they advertised the release as a true nasty from the Arcade, and it quickly wound up on the DPP's list of banned titles, or the fabled video nasties. The pre-cut British cinema version was released on video by Apex label in 1987, though the film was finally passed uncut in 2011.
And, of course, for those who aren't familiar, the list of video nasties were exactly what you'd imagine. Just a list of very graphic, very, considered overly graphic and violent horror movies from those part for that time that were essentially banned in the UK during their... they had their own kind of slasher movie, horror, morality kind of freak out there.
Satanic Panic kind of thing?
Yeah. And, of course, Cannibal Holocaust was also on that list. Evil Dead ended up on that list eventually.
That's depressing.
Well, rest assured, we will cover the full video nasties list if this podcast does continue the way we hope.
Yes.
We really appreciate the listenership we got in the last one. I just want to say that real quick, even though we're not done here. Anyway, I just wanted to say that. Please share and help us. Because we want to watch movies and talk about them. Okay, I'm sorry. That took us off, and now...
Ellison himself recalls just how strongly the audience reacted to his film. One time, the director went to a double feature of Friday the 13th and Don't Go in the House in New York. While Friday the 13th was playing, the audience screamed and cheered. They were having a good time. However, when Don't Go in the House was playing, the audience sat there not moving. Okay, so
I understand why.
But don't get me wrong, I love the slashers for the but like we were talking earlier, like I don't classify this as a slasher.
That's where the more psychological element,
psychological horror film,
right?
Because it really fucks with your head.
Yeah,
and for movies like that, like, you're fucking quiet because you're trying to figure out the fuck's going on.
Yeah,
and
I agree.
And that, movies that make me think like that, like, that's, like, shit I love. Like the movie Memento. How, spoiler alert, if you haven't seen it, I'm sorry.
Yeah, we forgot to say that up at the top, but they should know everything spoiler alerts.
Spoiler alert if you haven't seen Memento.
It's a horror movie review show. What else is it going to be?
Yeah, you got a point.
But
you,
Memento is essentially, when you get through the fucking movie, you realize the whole movie went backwards.
Oh, okay. That's a nice little kind of a twist.
First time I saw it, movie got done at like 1 a.m. and me, my dad, my brother, and a couple of the guys that were watching it were like, what the fuck? No, start that over.
Just rewatch it immediately?
Immediately.
You know, that's a good movie.
A fucking great movie.
It's similar to the movie Irreversible, which is a really, really disturbing movie if you've ever seen it.
Is that a horror film?
It's there's some horror elements in it, but really it's kind of its own thing. It's kind of goes in exploitation territory. It's best known for like a very long, drawn out rape scene. It's probably the most blatantly homophobic movie I've ever seen in my life.
Oh.
But that's for another time.
Yeah. As long as we don't watch, as long as we don't record review stuff like that and Antichrist, I think I'll be all right.
Antichrist.
Yeah, if you want to do Antichrist, David, you and Jake can do that one solo.
Yeah, that's. I mean, other than people, you know, ejaculating blood, there's nothing.
Nope. Oh, and nope. Rusty scissors cutting clitoris is off.
Nope, you lied to last week. No.
Yeah.
No, I literally, while we watched this movie, David, my brother, myself, and our friend Daryl, I just sort of rolled over and went to sleep. Just, like, shut off. Because I just couldn't deal with that movie. Willem Dafoe's a hell of an actor. Anyway, we are so far off fucking track.
Oh, yeah. Fuck. Sorry. I got distracted. I'm fat.
Food arrived a little bit early.
A lot of bit early. Anyways, as I was saying, Ellison had made a film that was so effective, it took the audience out of their comfort zone. It would be another 6 years before he'd make another movie, Joey, which didn't have all the outrage and all that stuff. It was more or less...
Didn't that star... guy from Friends? No, I'm just kidding. No, I'm sorry. Moving on.
Yeah, so basically he retired from filmmaking after that. He never worked in show business again. Nothing. Like, there's nothing about him after Joey. There's nothing about this guy. Like, not production, no writing credits, just disappeared from filmmaking.
Nothing.
You know, and of course you go to the critical reception of the movie. As you can imagine, you know, critics fucking hated this movie. big surprise, right? Calling it lurid trash and sickening, amongst other things. Some critics even went as far as to suggest that both the audience and the creators of the film were sick and deranged people. Okay, sure, whatever. Rotten Tomatoes. So Rotten Tomatoes scores is at 40% today. That's only only based on 5 critical reviews, which again shows just how forgotten this movie really kind of is. It was way before its time. You know, maybe not way before, maybe a couple months before its time.
5 critic reviews. How many user reviews?
Did not get that. But on the average rating though is a 3.75 out of 10.
Well, I think it's better than that personally, but
you
know, people rate shit harsher on the acting than I think you're gonna see us do in this fucking podcast.
Oh yeah, honestly, the acting, depending on the genre, the acting either will play a huge role, like your slashers. If it's not campy,
You want these 80s and 70s, late 70s fucking horror movies to be a little campy, don't you?
A little cheesy, yeah. Like,
I wouldn't say lurid trash, but,
But most definitely, Sleepaway Camp, you know.
Hysteria Lives. Grim is the only word for Joseph Ellison's psychological terror movie. And it's easy to forget just how nihilistic much of American genre cinema was in the 70s. Or was as the 70s turned into the 80s. Especially with the avalanche of cheese that was just right around the corner that we loved so much. But don't go out, or but don't go in the house is a chilly reminder of the times when we when practically anything went in film. And yeah,
that
really did, dude. I mean, that time, that late 70s time going to like early 80s, like some of the most sleaziest, violent, graphic, trashiest stuff ever put to celluloid came out in that time. And it was blatantly sexist, very homophobic at times. It was just, you know, balls to the wall.
And that's why Grindhouse theaters that showed, like, the double features of those kind of movies were so prevalent and prosperous in that time.
And popular. Yeah. And, I mean, in retrospect, Dave J. Wilson from Dread Central felt the film was underappreciated and called it a dark, chilling, grim, and gruesome depiction of the tragic repercussions of child abuse, which, no fucking shit.
That's really the heart and soul of this movie.
Yeah,
I think it's in the movie. It shows what movies like Psycho and Maniac did not physically show. It's just, you know, it's implied that Norman Bates in Psycho or Spinelli's character in Maniac were abused, but it's never physically shown. In this movie, you get actual physical demonstrations of the abuse on the child in flashbacks while it's happening, and it's effective.
And it's shot really well.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, you can't tell that when they're filming that, the flames aren't actually on. I mean, yeah. If you would have told me that they were actually burning the child, I might have believed you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, I mean, that type of practical effect, I don't know if it was practical. I think that was probably not practical effect, but you know what I'm saying.
Yeah.
That type of effect for the time... Fantastic.
That's still a special effect, because what they do is they overlay film.
It's similar to me to the effect that we talked about last week with the pedophile burn makeup.
Yeah.
Yeah, from Sleepaway Camp.
Yes,
yeah.
Correct. All right, guys, time for our final thoughts and individual ratings. David, we'll let you go first.
All right, so I saw this movie the first time, 2 years ago. Was obviously taken aback at the time just by the, you know, the first kill is just so damn graphic, dude.
Oh.
And rewatched it again recently, you know, for this podcast. And after seeing it twice, I want to go ahead and give it a 3.75 out of 5.
We're really close. Well, wow.
That would be like a 75%.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, look, it's it was definitely a couple months and literally a couple months ahead of time. It come out after Friday the 13th, when those kind of movies really became, you know, a big thing, a big pop culture phenom, it might have made a lot more money. We actually might know a lot more about it. I think my biggest gripe about it is that, you know, I would like to see more of the kills. After that first kill...
They don't show much, yeah.
They don't show anymore. And I think that's kind of what hurts it, is that it wants to be a slasher movie before there was such, but it doesn't show enough gruesome kills. And for a movie like this that's really kind of was sold on that basis almost, I feel like it was kind of necessary to get the point across. But otherwise, I thought it was, you know, but at the same time, it went into issues like child abuse, you know, on a more visceral level than you got from, you know, movies like this at the time. So yeah, 3.75 from me, definitely would recommend it. Yeah, I mean, definitely, it's a solid flick from an interesting transitional time in horror movies.
Yeah, I agree. I was about in the same place. I was going to give it a 3.8 for me. Mm-hmm. The acting is not great, but it's what you would expect for the time. So,
yeah.
I mean, that hurts it a little, but not a ton. The lack of the kills on camera after, like you mentioned, after the first one for me. It just, for me, it's not so much what's going on screen. It's the implied, like we talked about, the repercussions of the child abuse and what it did to this guy psychologically and So that's what I enjoyed more about this movie than the movie itself. Mm-hmm. Was just how it showed that and shined a spotlight on that kind of thing. So for me, 3.8 out of 5. It could have been better, but could have been a whole lot worse. It is definitely upper tier when it comes to slashers of the time or psychological horror at the time.
Yeah. So I'm on the same board as you guys, but I actually gave it a little bit higher score. I actually went with an even 4.0. Just because, like, I got to deduct a half a point for the acting. Just, but that
even for the time, it was a bit under par. But I mean, that's they probably hired who they could.
Right, and which is why I only deduct the half a point. You know,
right.
The other half is like David mentioned earlier, the lack of kill content.
And I think to David's point, if this had come out a year after Friday the 13th, you would have seen more kills.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah,
I think you probably would have seen like just a weird double. Time. I think you probably would have seen double kills.
Yeah, I think it was just you know, it was a product of just a weird time, a weird transition. You know, like they were going, you could tell this movie was going towards the era of more visceral, like we're going to show everything, but it wasn't quite there yet. You know, we were still kind of in the era of Texas Chainsaw Massacre. You know, where violent kills were implied rather than outright shown.
I was going to ask, just from memory, what are some other horror films coming out around the same time?
Well, I mean, Texas Chainsaw Massacre is probably the most, and Halloween is another one. You know, of course, that was a couple years earlier, not right at the same time. These are a couple years earlier than that, but they were very similar. They implied gruesomeness, but didn't necessarily show the gruesomeness.
Yeah, Halloween definitely did it better, but I mean, we're talking about John Carpenter compared to Joseph Ellison.
Yes.
I mean, there's a bit of a skill gap. So, but anyway, so next week, I believe that's where we're next on this. This is going to start to flow better as we go on.
Yeah.
Next week, I believe, is going to be Jake's movie pick.
A Dark Song.
David, do you know anything about this one yet?
I actually have not seen it, and I've not heard of it either, which is a rarity for me. So
it's an IFC. I watched the trailer with Jake. I believe it's... Most of the people in it are Irish, right? What I believe the accent was, and it's a ghost film, and it looks pretty damn good, so
it's
I look forward.
It's a psychological paranormal.
There we go.
So we have a bunch of drunk Irish people running around in a psychological paranormal horror film?
No.
No, it's played pretty straight.
Okay.
Yeah, it's, real fucky.
Real fucky. So,
real fucky.
And then after that, David and I will be doing a special Halloween episode of Terrifier from Netflix. Jake will be taking a bow out every time there is a clown involved.
Unless it is one of these four clowns. The Joker, Harley Quinn, Roxo the Rock and Roll Clown, or Krusty the Clown. Y'all can fucking burn in hell.
So you weren't a big fan of the random clown showing up in random rural areas trend a few years back.
Oh, no. I, a few years back at an Oktoberfest while walking around, I turned around and there was a clown right behind me and I punched it in the face on accident and on purpose. Now, afterwards, I felt like shit and I'm like, I'm sorry, dude. I'm terrified of clowns. I turned around and you were right there and I just... reaction. I am so sorry. And the dude was cool. He's like, hey, it's not the first time. I'm sorry, my man. I'm just going to head over this way and leave you be. I appreciate it, dude.
Holy shit.
If you're listening today, Mr. Clown, thank you for understanding.
Mr. Clown,
and,
you
I hope
nice.
You're not Art the Clown. But I look forward to David and I fucking breaking down a very brutal movie in Terrifier.
Oh, yes. A movie my wife refuses to watch, along with Texas Chainsaw Massacre.
When's the
second... You know,
oh, I saw today, there's a new Texas Chainsaw Massacre coming out?
Evidently, yeah. I mean, it's...
Is it another reboot? Is it another sequel? What are we getting here?
I'm not even sure. I really haven't looked too far into it. I know they've been trying to do another TCM for a couple years, ever since the last one. It put out kind of flopped. So, I don't know. It looks, I mean, I don't know. TCM sequels have been so hit and miss, you know. I mean, the remake is arguably one of the best horror remakes ever.
And then there's the one with what's his name? Matthew McConaughey, who he tries to suppress and hide the fact that it exists.
The New Generation, which is a rousing pile of just donkey crap.
Who's the female lead in that? She's famous.
Wasn't Renee Zellweger?
I believe
like
it
that?
Is. That's the name that I had in my head. No, I think the best one is the
Jessica
one.
Jessica Biel.
No, it's not Jessica Biel.
She's in the remake, which is actually awesome.
The one that I really like was the Texas Chainsaw Massacre 2, I believe. The one with Chrome Dome, played by Bill Moseley.
Oh, you mean Chop Top.
Chop Top, yeah, sorry.
Yeah.
Chop Top. Dude, that fucking movie is amazing.
It is amazing, and that's one we should probably cover at some point, is it's just so much to it. There's so
oh,
much
God,
there,
no, there's so
one.
Much content, guys. And if people are listening, there, if you go onto the Anchor app, you can actually send us messages. You can request movies. Like, we want stuff the three of us haven't seen before at some point, you know? So, please hit us up. Send us messages. That's Anchor. .com/reclusepodcastnetwork. We have other podcasts on that network to check out. But right now we're hitting about our 40-minute mark, which is where we like to be at. So, David, any final thoughts?
No. I mean, again, you know, check this flick out. It's kind of, I'd say, almost a nice little precursor to what was to come in the early 80s with the slasher film explosion that we got. It's not quite a slasher movie, not quite a psychological horror movie. It's kind of in between the two. But definitely, you know, definitely worth checking out.
Yeah, it's worth a watch. It's one that will go into my, Halloween time rotation for years to come. Jake, any final thoughts?
Watch the film. Like, it'll fuck with you, but you'll just be like... Because I'm not going to lie, like, I got home and I just was busy, but if... I didn't have plans, and I originally didn't have plans until, like, just before my day ended. I was going to text you and be like, yo, where can I watch that movie?
Oh, by the way, it's free to watch on YouTube.
Oh.
YouTube.
Shit.
It's really fun to watch the trailers of this also, because you get that classic... like, horror movie from the 70s and 80s fucking trailer voice. That guy, I love old school trailers like that.
Oh, yeah.
Anyway, so, next week is...
A Dark Song.
A Dark Song. We'll all watch that, and hopefully we get to that episode Monday, but, you know, just keep an eye out.
Oh, my brother Sean will be here for that.
Yeah, and Sean will be here, so... just keep an eye out. Tune in. Please follow us. David, what's your Twitter handle?
Let's see. It's, sorry, let me bring it up.
At David13, right?
Yeah, in the meantime, you guys want to give yours while I find...
You can follow at IWC Nation. We're working on changing that one. That's for the Recluse Podcast Network as a whole. You can follow at Osterman with two N's, Jake, all one word, or at RolandStoney1 on Twitter. Also, you can follow our other podcast hosts from the network at... You're no longer the Ginger Proxy, are you?
Jesus by proxy.
Jesus by proxy. That's Jason.
By proxy.
He's got a political podcast called Sprinkle of Ginger, and he's on our main podcast, No Preferred Nomenclature. And then at JMO1904, but fuck him.
Oh, wow. My God. Mine is Dave 13. My stage name.
And your 13 is spelled
T-H-I-R-T-Y-N.
All right. Give us a follow, guys. Follow the podcast. Tell your friends if they're into horror movies. We're going to do a lot of fucking cool shit, so stick with us. For everybody, I'm Matt. That's Dave. That's Jake. He's eating a sandwich, and we're out.